This podcast may contain language that's not appropriate for all listeners. Listener discretion is advised. Today we're going over Notting Hill. So if you haven't seen it and don't want us to ruin it for you, you might want to pass on this one, and we will see you next time.
Are you ready for One Dry Kiss?
Welcome to One Dry Kiss, our cussy, irreverent love letter to rom-coms, where we recap one singular. Is the lead actor slash actress amazing or awful movie in the month of May?
I had another way to say that. Amazing or amayes.
Amayes. Yes.
She's a hot mayes. Still keeping with the May theme.
I love it. Is the lead actor slash actress amazing or a mayes?
Mm-hmm. And are they eating mayonnaise?
In the month of May, we will find out when we do the movie Notting Hill. I am here today with my co-host, who?
What?
Who I would love to go to Notting Hill with, peruse all the vendors and traipse around the UK with, Miss Tamara Cosio.
Why did you giggle so furiously when you said that? I thought something bad was going to come out of your mouth.
Nope, nothing bad was going to come out of my mouth.
Uh-huh. Oh, I don't believe you. Are you holding on to something for later that we're going to say off recording?
No, I just I realized I couldn't figure out what to say. And I laughed because I was like, oh my gosh, Corinne, way to go.
I do the same thing. And I am here with my amazing co-host, not a hot Amayus, Corinne Edding. Just because I wanted to bring that back around because it was just that good. I really like it.
It was amazing. Yes.
Yes, it was. I'm trying to think of 15 more things to say and stick May in. Oh. Keep talk amongst yourselves.
Uh-huh.
Talk amongst yourself.
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm excited to dig into Notting Hill. A controversial movie, if you will.
Yes, we're going to get into a fist fight over this. Before we get into the dirty, nasty, gritty stuff, I do have to say, you know, sometimes at the top of the shows, other podcasts talk about things that they've been watching or reading or saw or podcasts that they're listening to. And I am very, very, very late to the game, but I have found a sitcom that I find absolutely delightful that I am binge watching right now. And it is The Superstore Show. Sitcom.
Oh.
The Superstore sitcom.
The Superstore sitcom. Well.
The Superstore sitcom. The super. It's so funny. I love it. I love the characters in it. It harkens me back to my days in retail. And I think that might be why it just scratches that itch where I'm like, sweet baby Jesus, thank God I don't do that anymore. And I feel for these people and their plight working in retail, but I still remember the camaraderie and the funny stories that I would have back in my day as an assistant manager at a similar department store. Not a big box store. It was kind of a big box store, but yeah, really enjoying it.
Well, I do love America Ferrera, so.
It's a hella diverse cast, too.
Yeah, it's a super diverse cast.
Super diverse. Very, very good show. Highly recommend. And I know it's already ended. I think it's been off for maybe a year and I don't care. At least I get to see how it ends.
Well, since you have recommended it, I will dive back into it because I watched the first episode or two of it and then I let it go. So I'm going to dive back in.
Actually, I didn't. I was kind of lukewarm about it too because Larry would watch it and I would just be sitting there sort of semi paying attention. Mm-hmm. And then probably halfway into season one, I'm like, oh, what happened next? What happened next? So it kind of grabs you.
You just need to get far enough in the series, kind of like Schitt's Creek.
Yes, yes, exactly. I don't think it's quite as good as Schitt's Creek, but what is?
Right. No, but for me, Schitt's Creek, I watched several episodes of Schitt's Creek and I was like, why?
Yeah.
It took me many episodes before I was able to fully embrace it all.
Oh, I feel that so hard. I had to leave and come back. I'm like, oh, okay, I watched a couple of episodes And then I'd like go a couple of weeks without watching it. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to try it again.
Yep.
Nope. Go away. Come back. I'm going to try it again.
Yep.
I'm going to try again. David. And then when I started quoting it, I'm like, they got me. They got me.
Thank you for the fabulous show recommendations.
You're welcome.
If we're going to give out show recommendations, I'm throwing my hat in for two shows.
Okay.
Will Trent. I love Will Trent. That's new this season.
And I don't think I've heard that one. What is that?
It's a detective show. Will Trent is a detective for the Georgia Bureau of Investigations. And it is so good. And then...
What streaming network is that on?
Hulu.
Oh, okay. I have Hulu.
And then the other one is Rookie Feds. It has... I'm just pulling up the wrong name for her.
Nope. Niecy Nash.
Niecy Nash. Thank you. It has Niecy Nash in it, and she's fantastic. I love it so.
I also tried to watch Succession because I remember Georgia on My Favorite Murder was like, oh my God, Succession, so good. You should be watching that. And I was like, okay. And I like lost interest halfway through the second episode. And I'm like, maybe it's just one of those things you got to stick with.
Maybe it is. I'm not that interested in watching that much conniving. So,
yeah, I have a cap for conniving. I'm not sure where that cap is, but I didn't realize it was so low. Because sometimes I used to like conniving shows, like a lot of reality shows tend to have a lot of conniving, and I enjoy those. Maybe it's just because I don't really care about the characters right now. They all seem kind of awful.
Uh-huh. True. Like Schitt's Creek. They're not conniving, but yeah, like Schitt's Creek, where that was why I couldn't get into it at first, because the characters seemed all kind of awful.
Yeah. So maybe I just got to give it a few more. We'll have to report back in next week.
Yes, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So, Corinne.
Yes.
How do you feel about getting started on Notting Hill? Or do you have a synopsis to share with us?
Oh, boy, howdy, do I have a synopsis to share. Yes. Yes, I do. As Tamara said, Corinne cannot think of anything clever synopsis. Thank you.
Corinne, all of those C's are silent.
Oh, shit. Orin, cannot think of anything clever to help you remember to do the synopsis.
That's right.
Great.
Oh my God, I just thought of that if your name was Corinne.
Yes.
And you're like, no, sorry, it's Orin. The C is silent.
The C is silent. And there's a star over the I. Thank you. William Thackeray, a 30-something-year-old played by Hugh Grant, lives in Notting Hill and owns a relic of a bookstore specifically for travel books. In the midst of wondering how he's going to save his failing business, ding, ding, famous 30-something actress Anna Scott, played by Julia Roberts, walks into his store and, unbeknownst to the both of them, into his life.
Ooh.
Will William Thackeray become famous by association and start selling his own line of barbecues? Will William and Anna's love be torn apart by her fame? Or will true love conquer all in Notting Hill? Keep those listening ears listening to find out.
Oh, beautiful. Absolutely. It's William Thacker.
Oh, shit. You're right. It is. Okay, thank you. William Thackeray.
I kind of like Thackeray, though. You know, like some guys are named Zach and it's short for Zachary. Yeah, me too.
Oh my gosh, I really committed to that too, because I said it more than once. I just get a little enthusiastic sometimes about the name Thackeray, apparently. It's because I'm such a big Hocus Pocus fan, I think.
Oh.
Yeah.
Makes absolute sense.
Absolute sense.
Too bad there's no witches in this movie, though.
I don't know. Is there?
Oh.
Tamara, you want to get into it and start us off in Notting Hill?
We're going to take a trip down to Notting Hill. Yes, I'm ready. We open with a lounge singery song called She by Elvis Costello. She may be the face I can't forget, a trace of pleasure or regret, maybe my treasure or the price I have to pay. She, and then, so I'm not going to go ahead and torture you with any more of that. But these lyrics are intertwined with video clips of Anna Scott, played by Julia Roberts, going to red carpet functions, smiling on celebrity tabloid feeds, and just being glamorous. She's the biggest star in Hollywood and is everywhere doing everything. We're getting a glimpse of her very public persona. Then, half a world away, we meet William Thacker. His voiceover tells us that, of course he knew who Anna Scott was, but they were worlds apart. Her in Beverly Hills, me in Notting Hill, which was incidentally my favorite corner of Britain, because its distinctive personality, where you could see the hairstylist that makes patrons look like members of Sesame Street, whether they want to or not, and how all the shops explode on the weekends, selling everything from antiques to not. A camera pans to a Jesus stained glass window right next to a Beavis and Butthead stained glass window. And he continues, all my friends are here and where I spend my time in the house with the blue door that my wife and I bought until she left me for someone who looks exactly like Harrison Ford and is where today I live some sort of half-life with the lodger called Spike. He enters his apartment and pushes aside a bicycle that's blocking the way, calling, Spike! Spike! Spike is played by Ray's Ifans. I'm not even sure if that's the right way to say his name, but I love this guy. He is such a funny actor in everything that I've seen. Ray's Ifan. Sorry if I mispronounced that.
I think it's Reese,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know how to say the last name. I looked up the pronunciation of his name, and it's Reese Ifans.
Damn it! Ray's. In America, we say Ray's, at least in this little corner of Anaheim. Sorry, Reese.
Great.
Spike emerges with disheveled hair and a scruffy beard. He needs William's help. Spike has a date with the illustrious Janine and needs to pick the proper shirt. He comes down with three. The first, a graphic that says, I want blood, with the faux plastic alien head poking out the middle, splattered with blood. William vetoes it. Huh. Next, he comes out with the graphic tee that says, get it here, with the huge black arrow pointing at his crotch.
Mm.
Will also vetoes that, explaining, that might not emphasize true love. Spike agrees. He does want to exude the look of love, so lastly he emerges with the shirt that says, you are the most beautiful woman in the world, surrounded by hearts and arrows. William enthusiastically agrees, yes, that's the one, until Spike races back up the stairs and Will sees the back which reads, fancy a fuck? Question mark. His roommate is as clueless as he is insufferable.
You know, the first shirt, the mm-hmm. I'm out for blood shirt, on one of the dating apps that I've used in the past, there's a prompt question that says, you know, what will you never do? And men, time after time after time, say, beat a woman. And I'm like, I know you're saying you're never going to do that, but like, let's just not even, don't suggest beating a woman, just period. And
that
and
shouldn't like, even be on the table. Like, we shouldn't even be negotiating or discussing that.
That's assumed. That is assumed.
Yes, right. I also won't kill anybody.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And that shirt is just like, would you like me to murder you? Yes. Mm. Yes.
And it was very graphic and very three-dimensional. And I would probably just be like, Janine, no, you have me mistaken for somebody else and just keep walking. Janine, I've known you for 12 years. Mm-hmm, no Janine here.
My name is Jeanette, not Janine.
Yes, just like the Reese Ray's conversation, just
exactly.
All in the pronunciation. Yes.
Will's voiceover continues. It was just another Wednesday, and I had no idea that my life would change forever as I walked the usual 1,000 yards to my travel bookshop. Will goes into the shop, greets his coworker Martin, and then begins crunching the numbers and realizes he's still losing money. He's licking his financial wounds when someone walks in. He doesn't quite see who it is, but can't shake the fact that he recognizes her. He asks, "Do you need some help?" She says, "No." And continues perusing the shelves just out of eyesight. After a few moments, she emerges, and it's Anna Scott, the famous woman from the intro! She is thumbing through books about Turkey, the country, not the Thanksgiving tree.
I would be really surprised to find a book about the bird Turkey in a travel bookshop. What in the world could you just... Here are the parts of the turkey. Here's the anus. Here's the wing.
What?
Here's the beak. Here's the foot. Like, you know, you get a little tour of the turkey, you know, turkey.
I can just imagine there's like Greece, Italy, and then you have, I don't know, Austria. And in between is Turkey, but it's not Turkey. It's just books on turkeys.
Yes.
So like the entire bookstore is travel books except for Turkey.
Maybe he's trying to diversify. You know, business has been bad. He's trying different things to see what sticks.
Well, you know, I think it might behoove him to have like a couple of just classics in there in the mix, you know?
Oh, yeah. Some books about chicken, cows, perhaps.
Sure, sure. I was thinking Paddington, maybe, but, you know, chicken and cows as well. Those are classic meats. You are correct.
Sorry, my butt's getting sweaty and my boob just grazed the microphone big time.
Hey there, sexy.
Okay. No, that was not sexy. That was sticky and gross, and I apologize that you're going to have to hopefully cut that out.
Oh, I was planning on just keeping it all in.
I don't know. The boob graze, I'm kind of interested to see how it sounds on the other side.
Oh, I know
how Corinne
sounds.
Hears it.
That's how
my
it
boobs
sounds.
Are violent. Wow.
Yeah. Anna Scott is thumbing through books about turkey. Trying to be a good bookseller, he offers her some alternative titles from an author who has probably actually been to the country. Anna politely declines, just as William catches a glimpse of his security camera monitor. Someone in the back of his shop is attempting to steal. Dun, 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 dun. So, in true American fashion, he takes out his shotgun and brings it to the back room and cocks
it. Oh, God. Oh, no. No.
No?
I'm so sorry. I've listened to too many podcasts in the last couple of days where people knock on the wrong door and get shot in America. And it's just too close to home that we're all a bunch of gun-wielding. Not all of us. I'm sorry. Let me take that back. That some of us are just some gun-wielding, gosh darn John Wayne blasting anything that comes into our yard because don't tread on me is just so depressing.
Yeah, Ralph Jarl, who went to pick up his brother most recently mm-hmm. and was killed by the homeowner by knocking on the wrong door.
Oh, he didn't die.
Oh, he didn't die?
No, he just got shot twice and thankfully survived.
Oh, my gosh.
They were talking about it on Let's Go to Court today on today's episode.
Uh-huh. I'm so glad. I didn't realize he wasn't killed. I'm very glad that he wasn't killed. So,
yeah.
Yay for that, Ralph.
Yay.
Well,
I'm just saying yay that, like, you just wish somebody would not get shot for going in the wrong house.
Oh,
just...
absolutely. And hey.
Full stop.
If you're scared or whatever, just don't open the fucking door. Seriously.
Right. You would think that would be the rational decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, this got dark real quick. I'm so sorry. You mentioned guns and I just went to a real dark place.
Well, we're not in America. We're in the UK, so that there's actually no shotgun involved. Yes. And he just goes over there and outwitties the guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So William does go back to the back room to confront the guy, minus any kind of weapons, just the weapon of his mouth. And he says to the thief, "Bad news, there's a camera here, so you can either surrender the book you stuffed in your trousers or I can call the police." The thief says, "What book in my trousers? I don't have no stinking book in my trousers." He's like, "Yeah, do. I saw you put it in there."
And not every guy has a 287-page rectangular-shaped penis, so,
Hello there, handsome 287-page rectangular penis. What are you doing tonight? Maybe it's inspiration for, like, for a new toy at an adult store,
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God.
I can see Tamara envisioning how that's going to work. And
I'm trying not to. I'm really trying not to.
He says the choice is yours. Get rid of the book, wipe it off, put it back on the shelf, and come out or bring it with you to buy, or I'll call the popo. Choice is yours. He leaves Mr. Thief and goes back to assist Anna. She jokes that she was thinking about stealing a book too, but now knows that that's a bad idea. She's chosen her title, which is, incidentally, the one he was bad-mouthing, and when she opens it, realizes the author has signed it. Ooh! William jokes, ah yes, couldn't stop him. He tends to do that if you can find an unsigned copy of his, it's worth an absolute fortune. Anne is charmed by his witty banter and chuckles as the thief makes his way to the front counter, sees Anna, and immediately knows who the fuck she is. He excitedly asks for her autograph and she graciously obliges. The thief looks at her signature and is puzzled. What did you write? Now, I think that he needs to be involved in a literacy program. I mean, he's stealing a book, but can he read is the question.
Maybe she has that signature that looks like chicken scratch.
Yeah, but she wrote a message, a love message, a message that says, I just called to say I love you. She smirks and says, that's my signature. And above it, it says, dear Rufus, you belong in jail. He chuckles and boldly asks if Anna wants his number. Nothing sexier than a book thief, huh? Huh? Winky winky.
You know, it would be really ironic if she put chicken scratch in the book about turkey.
Oh!
I can't tell if that's... It was your rendition of Macarena.
I was finally making your chicken Macarena dreams come true.
Oh my God. It works on so many levels. And you could keep on using it over and over again.
Anna shakes her head and politely says, thanks, but no. William is now enamored with the way she coolly handled the situation and throws in the good travel book that she decided against and that he recommended. She thanks him softly and leaves. A little while later, Will makes a trip out for refreshments. Ooh. On his way back, he's rounding the corner without looking and smacks straight into Anna and spills orange juice down the front of her shirt. Are you ready for a wet t-shirt contest?
Bucka, 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 bucka. Bucka, 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 bucka.
He apologizes profusely while dabbing at her top with his napkin, and she tells him, get your hands off of me, because he's totally feeling her up. Not on purpose, though. He offers to take her to his flat to clean up, but she tells him she just needs to find her car. And this, gentle listeners, is in the days before cell phones were prevalent.
Yeah, because you know she'd have one.
Uh-huh, for sure. She probably did have a pager, but not so good for, you know.
Fetching a car.
Yes.
Right.
Fetching your car. So William once again extends the gentle hand of hospitality. I also have a phone, he offers. I'm confident in a few moments we can get you spick and span and back out on the street in a non-prostitute way. She snickers at this, but tries to hide it with a stern face and demands to know in yards how far his place is. He points across the street. See that blue door? It's my place, 18 yards away.
Cut to them entering his flat. Anna lingers in the entryway while he hurriedly tries to de-spikeify the place, a.k.a. clean up. He directs her to his bathroom and phone, and she disappears upstairs with a few bags, only to reemerge moments later in a two-piece sequins evening gown that was obviously purchased for a gala, but is now the cleanest, most unjuiced thing she has with her. William's eyes light up, and he tries not to gawk, and instead offers her a coffee or a tea. She says no. He offers her an OJ, perhaps. She sneers, and he realizes this is a poor suggestion, then opens his refrigerator to offer her the full contents, including, would you like some apricots dipped in honey?
Ugh.
But they taste of honey, which defeats the purpose, because if you wanted honey, you'd just buy honey. She declines everything, and he asks if she always says no, to which she pauses and says no, and that she's got to go. He bids her goodbye and tells her it's been surreal but nice. Once she's out the door, he's kicking himself for the awkward things he said when his door buzzes, and it's her again. She's forgotten a bag, and he grabs it for her. They linger at the door, and he apologizes for the surreal comment, and she counters that she thought the apricots and honey was the real low point.
Yes.
And then kisses him. Inexplicably. It's nice and sweet, but they are interrupted by Spike. They hear him unlocking the door, and William immediately says, "Oh, shit, I'm so sorry. There's no excuse for my flatmate." But, surprisingly, Spike brushes past them with the cigarette dangling from his mouth, oblivious, and announces over his shoulder that he's going to get some food and then tell him a story that'll shrink his balls to the size of raisins. Anna takes this moment to duck out and suggests that maybe they keep their encounter between the two of them. William agrees, but adds, "Well, I'll keep telling myself that this happened, but I won't believe it either." Later that night, he and Spike are watching an Anna Scott movie, and Spike muses, "Imagine somewhere there's a man who gets to kiss her anytime he wants." William agrees that she's fantastic, but doesn't divulge that he did indeed kiss her earlier that day. A few days later, William is appalled to find his flatmate eating breakfast while wearing his wetsuit. There is a button section that attaches the crotch, and Spike is currently using it to hold his pack of cigarettes.
And while wearing his wetsuit, you mean wearing William's wetsuit?
Wearing William's wetsuit, because William asks why Spike is wearing it, and Spike admits he rummaged it out of his roomie's things because he ran out of clean clothes and thought it was cool and spacey. William reminds him that he will never have clean clothes unless he cleans them, and we get a real Felix and Oscar a la The Odd Couple vibe from them.
And I'm just thinking about you wearing your evening gown to do laundry at Tat's house.
Yes. And I cannot stop thinking about Spike wearing that wetsuit with probably no underwear, and I imagine he's very stinky.
Oh, yeah. No, that wetsuit, I'm guessing has never been worn before this moment in time, is now going to be burned.
Yeah. Ball sweat all up in there that nobody wants to deal with. You can just keep that, Spike. That wetsuit is yours now.
Yes. And look, it's got a convenient cigarette holder.
Yeah. That whole button-up portion in between the legs was just baffling. It's almost like a baby onesie, but instead of the cute little snaps that attach the crotch, it's like huge button crotch snaps.
Yeah, and it kind of reminded me of when we were in the early 2000s, there were the tops that snapped at the crotch.
Mm-hmm.
It also kind of reminded me of those, and I was like, but why would that be in a wetsuit? But why would those be in a regular suit as well? Who wants to have the whole unitard snap crotch action thing going on?
Mm-mm. No idea. Just know probably both instances are going to get a serious wedgie. Don't bend over.
I was watching Love Island, and one of the women on there had a snap crotch top on, and she's like, "It keeps on coming unsnapped," and she kept on having to snap
it. Guess what happens when you sneeze too? That's always real, real fun. You hope that you have it tucked into your pants really good, because that thing might fly up and take an eye out.
Ooh. But then you can use it to wipe your nose, and, it doubles as a hanky, so it's perfect.
I know where that snap has been. I'd rather use my sleeve. Thank you very much. Call me crazy. We next see Spike and William on the rooftop terrace, and Spike notices that the goggles that accompany the wetsuit are off. Will explains that they're prescriptions so he could see the fishes properly, and asks if there are any messages today. Spike thinks there were two, but can't remember who they're from or what they said.
Oh, gosh.
And we finally see William get irritated at his flatmate's lack of consideration. Spike is surprised by the attitude, because Will's been pretty even-kiltered up to this point and has the patience of a saint with this guy, and says, "Well, if you're going to be obsessive about writing down all your messages, an American girl named Anna called a few days ago, asked you to call her at the Ritz, and gave a completely different name." But of course, Spike can't remember what the completely different name was. Next, we see William excitedly talking on the phone to the desk person at the Ritz, attempting to explain the situation but not getting far, until Spike calls out from the other room, "Try Flintstone." He does, and it works. He's put right through to Anna's suite. They say hello, and she accuses him of playing it very cool, and William assures her that he's never played anything cool in his life. His flatmate, who he'll stab to death later, didn't give him the message. He proposes that he drop around for tea later, and she agrees and tells him to come. I don't know what time, but I said around 4, because that seems like a good tea time.
Sure. And he does. William makes his way to the Ritz with a bouquet of flowers in his hand. He is unnerved, though, by a gentleman who seems to be going to the same place, and who is approximately the same age as him.
And they look similar.
They do. It's like twins.
like a slightly redder-haired shadow of William Thacker.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, one of them's Arnold, the other's Danny DeVito, but they're...
Not quite that different. A little more similar. A little more similar.
They both enter the hotel through the same door, get off on the third floor, head down the same hall, and even stop at the same suite. William asks if this is the room he wants, and the gentleman nods. He thinks it's very odd, and for a beat wonders if Anna just picks up random guys in bulk and invites them for tea. I was wondering that myself. But it becomes clear when the door opens that he's in the midst of a press junket for Anna's new movie. He gets handed a packet and is ushered into a room with several reporters and is asked by Anna's publicist what he thought of the movie. William is at a loss, but his hallway companion says, "Oh, I thought it was fantastic, like Close Encounters meets Jean de Florette." William agrees. Yeah, what he said. The press coordinator asks what magazines they're from. William scrambles for an answer. Suddenly, his eyes catch on a copy of Horse and Hound. Because nothing says entertainment like Horse and Hound magazine.
Absolutely. Cutting edge of entertainment movies and film.
Mm-hmm. It's on a side table, has a picture of horses and hounds on it, and he Jan Brady's the shit out of that and tells her he's from Horse and Hound, and then adds that he's William Thacker and she might be expecting him. And what is Jan Brady's the shit out of something is what I ask.
In the Brady Bunch, when she was trying to convince her family that she had a fake boyfriend, and she's like, "Oh yeah, my boyfriend's name is George." "George what, Jan?" And she looks over at a table and sees a glass and says, "George Glass. Oh, his name is George Glass."
Yes. I remember George Glass. Oh,
I am so sorry. It sounds like there's a goddamn police helicopter floating around right up outside the apartment.
Are they coming for you, Tamara? Is this what I need to be concerned about?
You don't hear me because I ran away.
Your chair's just spinning.
Yeah. There's a little Tamara-shaped hole in the wall.
No, stay inside. Stay inside. You're safer.
Don't forget me, Melody.
So William's seated for a few moments with his hallway bestie, who's interrogating him about why he brought flowers. Not awkward at all. Before he gets called into a room. Anna is waiting for him, dressed in a purple suit and tie. She apologizes. She thought all of this would be over by now. Her PR chief enters the room, and William must fumble around and act as if he's trying to interview her. Since he's the pretend reporter from Horse and Hound, he improvs uncertainly. This film is great. I was just wondering if you ever considered having more horses in it? She's obviously amused by the predicament and tells him diplomatically. Sadly, it didn't make sense since the movie is in space. The PR chief leaves the room and now it's Anna's turn to apologize.
Discriminatory. You can have horses in space. Jesus.
Seriously, if you can have humans in space, you can have horses in space.
You can have pigs in space. You can have horses in space.
If you can have golden retrievers in space, because there's a movie about that, you can have horses in space.
And you can have actual monkeys in space, because that's who went up first. You can definitely have horses in space.
Oh, yeah. And dogs, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, I just said dogs, but there was actual dogs that...
No, I caught you. I caught you. We're not talking about movies. We're talking about real life here.
Yes.
Real life.
Oh, my gosh. We are so proving our point. We're so smart. This is it.
I'm protesting. I'm up in arms.
Where's our horsey love? Where's our horsey love?
Can you imagine that, though? Gosh darn it. If you did have, like, horses in space and they drop those massive logs of poo that they do and they're just, like, floating around in the cabin.
I don't think the horses would be very happy about being in space.
No, probably not. But they should get the opportunity.
Yes, they should. They want to sign up to go on a dong-shaped space mission. They can.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But now it's Anna's turn to apologize, and not for the fact that horses aren't in space. She says, I just wanted to apologize for the kissing thing. I don't know what came over me, and I wanted to make sure you were okay with it. He looks a little hurt, but plays it off. Yeah, yeah, totally cool. The PR rep enters again, prompting them. And Miss Scott is also keen to talk about her upcoming project. William once again bumbles. So our readers would love to know if there are any horses in your upcoming project, or hounds, for that matter. Our readers are equally intrigued by both species. She deadpans. It takes place in a submarine. And then I just have visions of horses clip-clopping through, like, the narrow submarine hallways.
Why not? If they can be in space, they can do anything.
Yes! Let's not limit our horsey friends. Come on now. William tries to recover, looking intensely uncomfortable. He says, okay, but if there were horses, would you be doing the riding or getting a stunt horse, double man thing? The PR agent gives William a confused glance as he leaves the room. As soon as he's gone, Will bumbles on. I'm so sorry. This is just a strange dream. I mean, not really the kind of thing that happens in real life. It's a good dream. It's a dream, in fact, to see you again. Anna looks at him with heart eyes, smiling coyly, and asks, what happens next in the dream? He contemplates this for a moment and says, well, if it was a dream, I'd change my personality completely, because you can do that in dreams, and kiss the girl. They gaze at each other for a few moments, and it looks as if William is working up the courage to actually do this. Kiss tractor beam is flickering on, but kisses interrupt us. The PR chief interrupts once again.
Blink! That's the kiss tractor beam going off.
Gosh darn it! Oh, we need to fix that kiss tractor beam. William is told time's up, but William asks for one more interview question. The PR chief says, just one more, and leaves the room. William looks at Anna with his baby blue eyes, asking, are you busy tonight? Anna replies, yes. And the next interviewer enters the room. Anna and William stand and shake each other's hands. Anna says, it was nice to meet you. And William concurs, yes, well, you are Horse and Hound's favorite actress tied with Black Beauty. And he leaves the room relieved to be done. But not so fast, William. Before he can leave the junket, he gets stopped by the publicist and is led into adjoining rooms where he is forced to awkwardly interview Anna's co-stars. It's a hot mess and deeply uncomfortable to watch, since he's never seen the movie and has no idea who most of the people are. He's about to leave, looking completely deflated, when the friendly coordinator stops him again and asks if he has a moment. He politely obliges and is surprised when he's led back into Anna's room. She's much more casual now. Her hair is down. Her tie is loosened. She tells him to take a seat as she slowly straddles him, gyrating her hips.
What's not did not happen? Not Anna Scott. She's a lady, for God's sakes.
A dirty lady.
If you're horny, get to it. Ride it. My pony. Because we were talking about horses earlier.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, it's perfect. She's like, I was inspired by all the horse talk. I'm going to ride you like my pony. So she actually doesn't straddle him, but she does tell him that her plans for the evening fell through, if he still wants to do something. Of course he does, but then remembers, bugger shit, bloody hell, that it's his baby sister's birthday and he was meant to have dinner with her. Anna says that's fine, but William assures her he can get out of it. And she explains that she meant it. It's fine, as in she'd like to be his date to the dinner. He's pleasantly surprised and agrees.
That section before this one was, mwah, chef's kiss. You did so good on that. And I was like bumbling through it and I'm like, I'm not really capturing this. And you totally like hit that out of the park. Thank you.
Thank you.
Cut to Max and Bella's house that evening. They are William's best friends. Max is busily cooking in the kitchen while Bella looks on. She's in a wheelchair, and they're talking about the miracle that is William bringing a girl to dinner. When he and Anna arrive, Max flippantly opens the door because his guinea fowl is burning. Bella greets them first and is shaking Anna's hand when she realizes who she is and is rendered speechless. Max finally comes over, is introduced and says, "Oh, hello, Anna." Pauses for a beat as a look of realization not washes over his face. "Scott! Anna Scott!" He also recognizes who she is, but quickly recovers and offers her some wine. Next, Honey the birthday girl arrives, and when she comes in, she absolutely loses her shit and gushes all over Anna about how beautiful she is, how she's always felt, and she's really, really thought this for a really long time, that they could be absolute best friends,
yes,
and how she should marry her brother because he's real nice. The love fest is interrupted by Bernie arriving. He comes in and is oblivious to who Anna is, gives Honey her present, and a little later sits down to get to know the newest addition of their group. He finds out Anna is an actress and mulls over what a difficult career path that is and how a lot of his past classmates, really clever chums that got into acting, and how they're scraping by. She nods politely and silently to all his anecdotes about how difficult and thankless this profession is until he asks, "So, for example, how much did you make on your last project?" She deadpans, $15 million. He's taken aback, and she excuses herself to use the restroom. Honey shows her where it's at, and once she's gone, Bella says, "Tell us quickly, what are you doing here with Anna Scott?" Bernie finally has a realization and roars, "Anna Scott!" and slaps his forehead over the stupid comments he made.
Oh, he doesn't say, "Great Scott!"
No. Aww. No, he doesn't. They all whisper conspiratorially when Honey comes in giggling, saying, "I followed Anna into the Louvre and was chatting her up so much that she had to ask me to leave. She was taking her knickers down and everything." They are all tickled over their new guest. We next get a montage of the birthday dinner. There's gift-giving, laughter, party poppers, nonstop conversation. This is obviously a good group of friends, yeah, and Anna seems happy to be part of the celebration. Towards the end of the evening, Max announces that they must be the saddest lot of overachievers, proven by Anna's presence, and offers the last brownie here at the table to the saddest sack amongst them, and inadvertently looks at Bernie, who nods knowingly. "Yes, I know. I'm in a job I don't understand. Everyone keeps getting promoted around me, and if my cheeks get any chubbier, no one will ever fancy me." I didn't put this in the script, but Honey looks over while smoking a cigarette and says, "Oh, I fancy you, Bernie." And he looks at her happily and says, "You do?" And she says, "Yes, before you got so fat."
Oh. And he's not even that fat.
He's not at all.
No.
I wouldn't even say husky. But they're joking. Max agrees, but adds that he also makes a great deal of money, unlike Honey. Honey jumps in on her spiel about working a thankless job in a record store that pays shit, how she loves cruel men and has feathers on her head instead of hair, weird googly eyes and bosoms that seem to be shrinking the older she gets. But Bella adds, "Oh, at least you're best friends with Anna Scott." Honey shakes her head knowingly and says, "I know, she really does need me, doesn't she?" And Bella adds, "And all of your limbs work."
Ooh,
it's time for Bella's pitch for the brownie, and she has some very compelling points. She's in a wheelchair, gave up smoking, which was her absolute most favorite thing to do, and they just found out they can't have a baby. That's surely worth a brownie. Her eyes water slightly as she looks at her husband, Max, who looks back at her lovingly, waits a beat before smirking and telling her, "Well, I don't know. William's in a pretty thankless career. Used to be handsome, but now is kind of squidgy around the edges and is sure to never hear from Anna again when she finds out his nickname in high school was," the whole table says in unison, "Flopsy." William thinks, "Oh, God damn it, you did it. Thanks. Thanks for that." And obviously doesn't plead his case because Max has done such a good job, and just takes the brownie before Anna protests and says, hey, don't I get a shot?" The group looks at her dubiously, but allows it. And Anna argues that she's been on a diet since she was 19, which means that she's been hungry for 10 years. All of her heartbreaks are splashed across tabloids like Entertainment, and it has taken two rather painful procedures to look like this. She points to her chin and her nose. "And," she says darkly, "someday everyone will realize that I can't act and forget me, and I'll be the woman who used to look like someone famous." The table is somber for a moment before Max exclaims, "Nice try, gorgeous," and William adds, "pathetic attempt to hog the brownie," and they all laugh good-naturedly, including Anna,
who lets a tear trickled down, a single tear trickled down her face at the loss of the brownie. But I'm sure William's willing to share.
Yes, I really wanted that brownie. Didn't you hear me say I was on a diet since I was 19?
At the end of the evening, everyone is saying their goodbyes. As the door closes behind William and Anna, they can hear cheering back inside the house. And William tries playing it off. They usually do that for me whenever I leave. Anna chuckles. Sure. They walk down the street and he asks if she wants to come back to his place. She declines. Too complicated. But you know what's not complicated? Breaking into a private garden. Well,
easy peasy.
Yeah, it's not too complicated for Anna, who quickly scales the wrought iron fence. However, William, after being taunted by Anna, saying, come on, Flopsy, let's go.
And him stumbling a few times and saying, whoopsie daisy.
Oh, yes. Which she taunts him for as well. Whoopsie daisy.
Nobody says whoopsie daisy, and even when they did, it was 50 years ago and said by 12-year-old girls with ringlets. I have not seen this movie that many times.
If you haven't seen this movie that many times, I'm about to give you a hard time.
Okay.
So William barely makes it over on a wing and a prayer, declaring bugger over and over as he awkwardly negotiates his way over the fence. Finally, he approaches Anna, declaring to her, now, what in the world could be so special about this garden that would make it all worth it? Now, Tamara, you wrote the script. You did not include the fucking kiss.
I did not. I see that now. I cut a chunk from this because I was trying really hard not to, like, write out the script verbatim, and I sadly accidentally hocked a loogie on it. Hacked that off along with the whoopsie daisy line because I thought that it was running a little bit long. I apologize. They kiss at this point and it's very good, and I left it out, and the script is all the worse for it. Corinne, thank you for correcting me.
I was like, you know, like, you're going to leave stuff out. That's fine. And if I think it, you know, I want to include it, I'll put it in. Or, you know, if I think.
Oh, bitch, this is called One Dry Kiss. The podcast is called One Dry Kiss. And you leave the kiss out. You leave the kiss out.
Yes. It's a pinnacle romantic moment. And you're like, eh, oh. Who needs the kiss?
There's so many other good things going on. We don't need it.
Yes, we do. We need all the kisses. We need all the kisses.
Sorry.
Anna turns and looks at him with hard eyes and kisses him. And it's a good one, as Tamara said. Suddenly, the whole breaking into the garden idea looks a lot better to William. During the outing, Anna decides she's not going home to America. And her and William make plans for the next night. Cut to the next afternoon. William is frantically rummaging through his apartment looking for a pair of glasses. He complains that he...
Wait. You left the For June Who Loved This Garden from Joseph Who Always Sat Beside Her.
Yeah.
Because that's the same bench that they're sitting
it's
at
not
at the
same
end.
Bench that they're sitting at
it's the same bench.
No, there's no.
It is so the same bench.
No, there's no thing on it. They're in a different park. They're in a public park. And they're in a private park right there that's very small.
I thought they'd just get a flat around the private park so they can go to that specific bench in the place where they first kissed.
Well, that's a nice thought. I totally agree with you.
She's a movie star. She's got billions of dollars. I'm sure she could do that if she wanted to.
I know she could do that if she wanted to, but it does not change the fact that they're in a different place on a different bench.
It could be the same bench.
There's no plaque on it. There's no writing on the bench.
I didn't even see where the writing was.
It's on the center of the bench. It says, and then it has the years that the lady was lived and died. Oh, it was like 1912 to something else. Yeah.
Oof. That's an old ass bench.
The bench was made after she died, not when she was born. Anyhow, there is a bench that they sit on that is dedicated, as Tamara said. And yeah, it's fine. I guess it's kind of sweet.
You could just cut that out if it's not the same bench. The only reason why I thought it was in there is because, or the only reason why I included that is because I thought it was the same bench at the end.
Yeah, no. Sadly, it's not. So many tears of sadness. It would be cool if it was, though. I think that they missed out.
They should have done that. Yes. Really do better.
Do better. Mm. Cut to the next afternoon. William is frantically rummaging through his apartment looking for a pair of glasses. He complains that he has 20 pairs that are always scattered about until he needs them. And I just want to comment that his glasses are the same kind of glasses that I wore for much of that period of time as well. Mm-hmm. Spike is sitting on the couch, disinterested in Will's plight until he hears his flatmate open the front door. "Did you find any?" he calls out. And Will admits, "Sort of." And we next see him and Anna in the darkened theater. The only prescription things he could find were his scuba goggles. He intently watches the film with them on as Anna sits beside him, chuckling and playfully throwing popcorn at him.
"You scuba goggle wearing fool, you."
It's a really cute looking scene.
It is a super cute scene.
Yeah. So, like, we've had, like, two super cute scenes back to back, like the climbing in the over the fence thing and this one. And before that, I was like, he's got really good friends.
I know. I was like, can I just come over for birthday dinner too and invite myself and just like squeeze between?
Seriously.
Bernie and Honey and just like park a spot in your life?
Me too. I'll sit on your lap if there's not enough room for me to squeeze in another seat.
Yeah. I know it's like sometimes when I've been around people that have like groups of friends, I'll be like, oh, that person's cool. I don't want to spend any more time with that person. And this person's kind of just talking my ear off. And there's like a mix of people usually that I'm like, oh, I might want to hang out with them. And some that I'm just like, don't care to see ever.
Yeah.
And like every single person at his table, I'm like, I'd be friends with all of y'all.
Aww.
I'd be friends with all of y'all.
They'd be friends with you too, Tamara.
Damn right they would be.
Yes. Including Anna Scott, your best friend. Well, after me.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. After the movie, they go to dinner at a swanky sushi place. They are in a booth and a group of guys behind them. Actually, let's rephrase the word guys. A group of British bros behind them start talking about Anna Scott and her movies. The comments start out good-natured, and Anna and Will are chuckling while listening to them. But the assholes eventually start getting crude. The alpha table guy, love that description, thank you, Tamara, says, "You know, in 50% of the languages, prostitute and actress are the same word. And Anna is your definitive, winky, winky actress. She's really angling for it." Oh, my gosh.
Ew.
The guys start howling lewdly, and William has had enough. He gets up from his seat and tells the group of men, "That woman you're talking about is a real person and deserves consideration. Not just jerks like you drooling over her." The table scowls at him and asks, "What are you, her dad?" Anna sneaks behind him and pulls him away. They're almost outside the door, and she admits she appreciates his comments. She would have done the same thing herself a few years ago. In fact, she beelines back to the table, smiling radiantly, and apologizes to the guys for her friend's behavior. They are awestruck. Alpha table guy tries to apologize, but she shuts him down. "I'm sure you were joking, and it was all in good fun, and I'm sure all your penises are the size of peanuts. Enjoy your dinner. Try the tuna. It's really good," she says, grinning, and walks away. And I'm glad she bit back at them, and I understand why she made that comment, but I just want to take a moment to address the small dick in the room. Having a small dick doesn't make a man any less of a man, and there are some very nice small-dicked men out there. Culturally, the size of a man's penis is tied to their manhood / masculinity, but a dick does not make a man.
Mm-hmm.
Small dick jokes are toxic and do awesome men with small to no penises a disservice and can needlessly shame them. So,
right.
I just had
to say that. Hear. Anna hears Corinne and apologizes for the small dick comments, not to the alpha male or the group of lewd guys, but to William. Just kidding. No, she doesn't. She actually chastises herself for being so rash, but really, William assures her that she was brilliant. When they get to her hotel, she asks him to come up, and he thought that was complicated, but she's apparently changed her mind and asks him up a second time, but just to give her 5 minutes. He waits the obligatory time, goes to her hotel door, but when she opens it, her persona has changed. Unbeknownst to her, her boyfriend, played by Alec Baldwin, surprised her and showed up. She tries apologizing and explaining to William when Alec pops around the corner. They cover the interruption by saying William is room service, making one last round for the evening, and Alec makes a request for really cold still water and then jokes, "I know you British like your beverages warm. I wouldn't want you losing your job over this." Then he asks William to 86 some dirty plates and trash. This causes Anna to finally intervene. "Oh, no, I don't think that's his job." But Alec apologizes, puts some bills into William's hand, and then asks Anna what she's going to order. She's confused, and then he reminds her, "Room service? Weren't you going to order something?" Oh, she admits, "I haven't decided yet." And Alec chuckles and reminds her to be careful, because he doesn't want to be the actor that with the girl who got fat.
Ew.
Tamara says, "Fuck right off."
Seriously.
And that would be the pot calling the kettle black, Mr. Baldwin, because I believe you are the one that's gathered a few extra LBs in your older age. Mm-hmm. Ironic.
Don't you think?
Nobody's going to shame you for it.
No.
He then kisses Anna, asking, "Good surprise or bad surprise?" She plasters a fake smile on her face and says, "Good surprise." Once he goes into the next room, Anna apologizes again and says she doesn't know what to say. And William gracefully offers, "I think the proper thing is goodbye at this point." And he leaves with his broken heart, the dirty dishes, and trash.
Like, I'm sorry, you couldn't have mentioned that you had a boyfriend earlier? Excuse me? Meh? Hey, meh?
I can't remember, but I know, in an additional scene that's after this one that she's like, "I didn't know if he was going to come back. I didn't know if he was ever going to come back." So it sounded like they were kind of off and on.
It's still something that I would have addressed. Like, if I were in her situation, I would have been like, "Hey, I like you. I want to hang out with you. But let me just tell you, there's this, like, weirdness in my life right now."
I don't know. I think if she thought that it was just a fling, she'd be like, "Why am I going to go through all this complicated busyness? I just want something that's going to make me feel good right now." And maybe she didn't think it was going to be anything serious with him. So why get into all the serious, heavy, sticky stuff?
Because they went on a date instead of boning on the park bench.
Yeah, one date. It's not like they were getting engaged.
Well, really? They weren't getting engaged?
No, not at that point. No, nuh-uh.
I saw a ring pop outline in his pocket, though.
You know those Brits, they just like putting weird things in their pockets, like rings, books, all kinds of things.
Ring pops are serious business. Whenever I see those, I'm like, particularly if it's blueberry flavor, you know there's about to be an engagement.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Hardcore engagement.
Yes.
So, you know, it's serious. If it's blue, it's serious. Mm-hmm. We then get a montage of heartsick William watching Anna Scott movies, leading a sad half existence. He explains to Spike that he got a hit of love heroin when he kissed Anna and can't ever get it back. Then his friends attempt to set him up as a distraction with various women. First, it's Tessa, an enthusiastic, frizzy-haired, I don't think her hair is frizzy at all, so I put that in quotation marks, co-worker of Max.
I totally thought her hair was frizzy.
Was it?
Mm-hmm.
I just know that my hair looks frizzier than her hair on any given day if I don't put the right product in it, so I'm like, oh, it's not that bad. Maybe it's sympathetic. Non-hair frizzing goggles I have on.
Your hair, when you wake up in the morning, does not even look close to that voluminous and frizzy.
Oh, you have not seen me lately. I use my blow dryer a lot more often nowadays. Tessa talks a lot and wants to get sloshed as soon as wine is offered. William's not too keen on her. Then there's Keziah, a fruitarian that only eats raw fruit that has fallen from trees or bushes naturally. Mm. Otherwise, it's murder. This obviously doesn't go over very well. And the last date is an unnamed cute girl with a short pixie cut who compliments Max on his cooking. Max protests, saying, as they're all sitting around a table because Max and Bella are on a double date with unnamed girl and William, Max protests saying that it was inedible, and the girl crumbles into laughter and admits, really, really inedible. She has a good sense of humor, and after she departs, Will comes in and tells his friends that she was absolutely perfect for him. But he's not in love, nor could he be in love at the drop of a hat. He tells his besties that he's only loved two girls in his life apart from the American. The first was his ex who left him faster than he could say Indiana Jones. And the second, we learn, is Bella. the girl in the wheelchair, who loved William in a sadly asexual way and promptly went out with his best friend. Bella admits, "I still love you, though, but kissing you is like kissing my ears." William laments that 30 years from now, he'll probably still be alone crashing on their couch, and they invite him to stay the night, and he does. The last thing we see is Max carrying Bella up the stairs while the two are chuckling over a shared joke.
The next day, William walks home and passes a newsstand. On the front page of every magazine is a picture of a younger Anna Scott with headlines like, "What a lot of Scott," and a shock porn flick. Later, William's in the bathroom shaving when his door buzzes. And it's Anna. She stands in sunglasses and tearfully asks to come in. What the heck is Anna doing there? Is she A, selling Girl Scout cookies and using her phenomenal acting skills to garner sympathy? B, looking for her lost puppy? Or C, she finally realized what a great guy Will is and has come to beg for his forgiveness? Or finally, the ultimate D, none of the above. Fuck off. Probably, but find out with us after this break. And we're back. When we last left off, there was a tearful Anna Scott on William's doorstep.
D, 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 no, no, C, no, D, no, C, D, 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 D.
You want some D? Is that what that's about? Or maybe that's what Anna Scott wants, is D showing up on the doorstep like that.
Oh, shit.
Mm. Sadly, it is the D. Not the D, but...
We got it. We got it. Yeah.
Once inside, Anna explains that the tabloids have gotten a hold of some pictures that she took when she was young and poor, and she didn't realize it, but they also did some videotaping. And now they're everywhere. Naked pictures, and I'm guessing naked pictures with a guy, or maybe another lady. I don't know, but... yeah, naked sexy pictures / video. She tried to go to her hotel room, but it was completely surrounded by paparazzi, and she has nowhere to go. She, almost as an afterthought, apologizes for how things went between them the last time. Anna Scott is not good at apologizing.
Nope.
But William doesn't care. He assures her that this is the place where she can be safe. He offers her tea or a bath. She whispers, "A bath would be great." Cut to her soaking upstairs in the tub when Spike comes home. He's gotten his hand on one of the tabloids and is gawking at the nudes, so much so that he doesn't see Anna in the tub when he goes to take a piss. She calmly says, "From the tub, you must be Spike." He looks like a deer caught in headlights and slowly backs out of the room. Outside, he tries to maintain his composure and peeks back in to make sure it wasn't his imagination. Anna is still there and he utters, "Just checking." Backs out and thanks the heavens above that they have delivered the starlet into his house. After a bit, Spike heads out for the pub and William and Anna are hanging out, just the two of them. They can make it if they try, just the two of them, you and you. They're hanging out at the table and seem to have fallen into a comfortable rhythm. He runs lines with her for her next gig on the rooftop terrace, and she marvels that he has a Chagall print hanging in his living room. It's called, what's it called? How do you pronounce it?
It's called Marie, but there's a hyphen over the first E, so I'm not sure how it's pronounced.
Great. Or The Bride, which is a woman in a red and white wedding dress, a man hovering over her, and various fish, goats, and other characters positioned around. Anna says, "That's what she thinks love is, like floating in a sea of blue." William looks at it, contemplative, and adds, "Yes, floating with a goat playing violin." She chuckles, "Of course you have to have the violin playing goat there. Duh." Towards the end of the evening, they are eating ice cream and she is venting about the irony of her situation because of how careful she is about nudity now. She explains the specifics of her nudity clause. The movie can show the arc of the buttock, but not both cheeks. William is intrigued. "Use a stunt bottom?" he asks, to which she gushes, "No, but I could if I wanted to." He contemplates this. "What an odd career path. And what do you put on your passport? Mel Gibson's stunt bottom?" "Actually," she corrects, "Mel does his own ass work." as she takes a large spoonful of ice cream, smiles and proclaims, "It's delicious." William asks, "The ice cream or Mel Gibson's bottom?" She smiles mischievously, "Both." But William presumes, "You wouldn't lick both, would you?" Anna holds up her spoon. "Well, this is tart and fuzz free." They both laugh and are enjoying each other's company. That night, William takes Anna up to his room, tells her good night, and they linger in the doorway for quite a while. But he is a gentleman, and eventually, when she's not like, "Hey there, bow chicka bow bow," which he's kind of hoping for, but instead she just goes into the room, he goes back downstairs to sleep on the couch.
Yep. Well said.
Yeah. But he keeps tossing and turning. He gets up at one point, but thinks better of it and lays back down. He hears footsteps coming down the stairs. Oh, is it Santa? A.K.A. Anna. But sadly, it's
what
not.
Did you call her?
Santa.
I thought you said Fanta. And I'm like, no. Oh, is that her persona? Did she play that in a movie?
Fanta? No. Because, like, you get all excited. It's Santa coming down the stairs.
Santa was way better than Fanta.
All right. Fanta's pretty good, though. Fanta, Fanta, don't you want a Fanta, Fanta?
She was a dancing Fanta girl in those commercials back in the day.
Yes. In the little go-go.
That's where all those saucy photographs came from.
You don't even want to know what she does with the grape Fanta.
Ooh.
Ooh. Unfortunately, it is neither Fanta nor Santa nor Anna. It is Spike. Womp, 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 womp. He just came downstairs to remind William that Anna is single and is up in his bedroom. Winky, winky. And he shouldn't waste this chance. William is chivalrous, though, and tells Spike that Anna came here for help and he won't be doing that. To which his twat roommate responds, "Well then, do you mind if I have a go?" No. William snarls at him and Spike gets the message and slinks back to his room. Or so William thinks, because a moment later, there's footsteps again and he says to the dark, "Oh, sod off!" He hears Anna say, "Okay," and start to retreat, but he stops her apologizing. He thought she was someone else, Santa, and assures her he's very glad that she's not. They slowly start necking, touching, kissing. He pulls her shirt down right away, and I'm like, whoa, the passions of it all. Just cut to that chase. Then we see them presumably post-coital in William's bed. She slings her arm over him in her sleep, and he smiles happily.
The next morning, they're laying under the covers opposite each other. William muses that he can't believe he's allowed to see her naked, and she reminds him, "You and everyone else." Oh, sorry about that. And she adds, "What is it about breasts that make men go crazy? Every second person has them. They make milk. Your moms have breasts." William comes over to take a quick peek under the covers to try to solve this mystery. But after taking a lingering look, can't figure it out.
He's a regular Nancy Drew, that one.
He is. Yeah. But if he was a Nancy Drew, he'd be able to figure out the boob dilemma and see why they're so appealing. This amuses her, but she gets serious and said, "Rita Hayworth used to say that men went to bed with Gilda, but woke up with her. Is that how you feel?" He gazes at her a moment before admitting, "You are lovelier to me today than you've ever been." She gets up grinning and tells him, "I'll be right back." She comes back a few minutes later with breakfast in bed, and somebody buzzes the front doorbell. He gets it while she fetches the jam that she forgot, and when William opens the door, he's assaulted by hundreds of paparazzi yelling and snapping photos of him. He shuts the door quickly when Anna asks, "Who's out there?" And he inexplicably stays silent. She thinks he's up to something, like a surprise, and then giddily goes to the door. And at the last moment, Will tells her, "No, Anna, stop!" But it's too late. She opens it, gets photographed, and flies into panic mode. She calls her publicist and then quickly packs, yelling at William that his furry friend thought he'd make a quick buck by telling the papers she was there. William tries to placate her, but she's furious and tells him that he doesn't know how the papers work. They'll file this away to use against her. But it'll probably be great for his business. People will flock to the bookstore to buy something from the guy who banged that actress. Well done. Will asks her for a bit of perspective, but this infuriates her even more because she's been dealing with this for 10 years and he's dealt with it for all of 10 minutes. She adds that she'll always regret coming here, and William says sadly, if it's okay with her, he'll always be glad. She looks as if she's about to say something more, but the door buzzes, and it's Anna's entourage coming to sweep her away from this dilemma. That's the one part of the movie that just enraged me, because I'm like, say something, motherfucker. She's going to the door. You know she's hiding from the paparazzi. Why aren't you telling her? Like, I would have thrown my body between her and the front door and been like, don't open that.
Well, he told her not to open it. She was like, no, don't do it. Don't do it.
Yeah, but she's like, who is it? No, he was like, she walked from the kitchen to the front door past him. So there was a good chunk of time where she actually had to go around him to get to the door. This is when you throw your arm on the wall and block her way and be like, don't do it. It's the paparazzi. Will.
I think that he was so surprised, and it just had happened moments before. He was just trying to like process it all.
Don't defend him. He's a clever chap. Mm-hmm. He's so quick with the turn of the phrase and quick-tongued and witty that he could say paparazzi, if anything.
I think that she should have known better than to just whip his door open.
Fair, yes. I think both of them are at fault. I think he's a little more at fault because he knew it was out there. Yeah, but yeah, that was just the scene, that one scene where I was like, But anyways, next we see Will confronting Spike, who admits that he may have told a few fellas down at the pub. So Anna was right. He did spill the beans.
Not for money, though.
No, he was just bragging.
Yeah.
He's not a complete shite. Then it's heartbroken William time again. He walks through his neighborhood and we get a continuous time-lapse shot of William walking as the seasons change, spring turning into fall to winter and back. People changing, as do decorations and wares, but he still stoically makes his way to his bookstore every day.
I gotta say, that's one of my favorite scenes ever in movies. And I think it's actually done better in the Hulu version of Four Weddings and a Funeral. I think it's just done magnificently. Ooh. In that one.
Mm-hmm.
But they took it from this one, from this movie.
Yeah. This one, I did not go into detail, but as he's walking, like, you see the leaves blowing around him that turns to snow, and he passes a woman that's pregnant, and then a few seconds later, it's sunny, and she's holding a baby.
Yeah.
He passes by Honey that's got her arms draped around some guy that seems totally disinterested in her, and then 5 seconds later, like, she's slapping him, and they're breaking up.
Yeah,
so
kicking
it's like
him to the curb.
Really, yes. Yeah. It's a really good, like, showing of some time lapsing.
Yeah.
In an interesting way.
Yes, absolutely. I completely agree.
Until one fateful afternoon, Honey and Spike giddily enter William's shop, and Honey, his sister, produces Anna's British publicist and an American contact number, so you can call her. He feigns excitement, but when they leave, he promptly throws a number into the trash. He's done being enamored with her. This is further expressed at another dinner of the saddest lot of overachievers, but this time the group of friends is mourning the loss of their friend Tony's restaurant. It's closing down soon due to lack of business, and they're having their final meal there.
Aww.
Everyone is getting sloshed when Max asks Will if he's over Anna. William admits that he is and apologizes for being such a sad sack the last 6 months. When Max informs him, then, it won't concern you at all that she's in England filming at the Hampstead Heath then, right? William crumples. Oh, sod it. He was on his way to getting over her, but damn if she doesn't keep coming to his neck of the woods to make movies and crap.
Cut to the next day, and Will is making his way to Hampstead Heath, where Anna is filming. He tries to get onto the film set, but the security is not having it. He tries explaining, I'm not a creeper, but that's what any creeper would say, so the guard denies him entry. But luckily, Anna is exiting her trailer close by and sees him. She looks conflicted about coming over, but ultimately does so. Her eyes don't open with like, oh, I'm so happy to see you. She's just like, oh.
Yes. It's so just like unreadable, but it does not look like I am so glad that you're here.
Yeah. No. In no way, shape, or form. But she does come over, and he tells her that he didn't know she was filming there until yesterday. she tells him, I was going to call, but it's been crazy and it's the last days of filming and things have been going badly. He takes this as a polite brush off, but it's not. She asks if he'll stay. There are things that need to be said. She's ushered off to location and a production assistant leads William through the lavish estate grounds. He finds out that Anna is doing a Henry James film, one that he recommended she do ages ago on the rooftop terrace. He gets seated with headphones to hear the actors saying their lines, and he's privy to a conversation between Anna and one of her co-stars, who seems to be sassy and gay, because he talks about another co-star's shareable ass, not in a sexual way, just about how enormous it is. And they pan over to the woman, and I'm like, I can't even tell that she has an ass.
No offense. It looks all bustle. It's all bustle.
Yeah. No offense to that woman, but her big dress is covering everything.
And it doesn't even look like it. Yeah, it looks like fabric.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it just looks like fabric. Okay. So for the kind of dresses that I wear, most people need a petticoat. I don't need a petticoat because my ass and my hips are like, bam, I am here. I am fluffing that dress out. However,
all natural fluff,
no petticoat necessary. This woman, though, her fluff was fabric fluff, which is fine. I am sure that you put a pair of jeans on her and she's got a lovely ass. But
yes.
Yeah.
Shall we call your ass then a buddy coat?
A buddy coat?
Because it's your butt and a petticoat. Get a buddy coat.
It's multi-purpose. And it's not scratchy. It's soft. So, you know, win-win.
That, yes. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pleasing to the touch and to the eye, or so I'm told.
Oh, finally somebody understands my ass and its attributes. Anna doesn't necessarily agree with about the other actor's attributes as well. But she humors her co-star until he asks, who's that chap that came on to set? She closes her eyes and says, ugh, it's someone from the past. And I'm not even quite sure what he's doing here. It's all pretty awkward. Will hears this and his face falls. He shakes his fist up at the sky and proclaims quietly inward, curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal. He takes this as a cue to leave. Obviously, he showed up unannounced and she was just humoring him. He leaves the set brokenhearted, but now with the resolve that it's truly over. And I would say, in most cases, I would be like, because Hallmark movie, oh, you should be asking questions. However, in the Hallmark movie, when they have their curse your sudden but inevitable betrayal moment, previous to that moment, they've had somebody who's been being very sweet, very kind, very nice to them.
Mm-hmm.
And William has not had this experience. Instead, he's had somebody who's, like, lied to him, dumped him off, and ditched out on him in several occasions. And not really apologized for any of it. So, I understand why he isn't like, you know what? I just need to ask about this in this moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in most cases, I would say, ask! Dude, ask! Clarifying questions!
This time you're like, run!
Yes. William, put on your winged shoes. Get onto your space horse.
Get one of the books from your travel bookshop and use it. Get far, far away.
Except in one that's about turkeys.
Yes. No, not the turkey one. Not the turkey.
The next day we see William crunching numbers. Martin comes in and tells him that there's a delivery. William is annoyed. Martin should be dealing with it. But Martin explains that it's a delivery for him, not the store. So he reluctantly trudges out, muttering, if I employed a wet rag, would I have to pay it as much as I do you? Only to find Anna standing there with a large, flat, brown, paper-wrapped package. And I knew what was in that package. It wasn't
did you?
Bomb. Yeah, I did.
Oh, I thought it was bomb.
She states, you disappeared yesterday. He plays it cool and says, well, I didn't want to disturb you. There's awkward small talk, and she explains that she brought something for him from America and that she was serious about wanting to call but didn't know how to after acting so awfully twice. They've been together all of two times, so it's great. He's pleasantly surprised and asks if she should open it with her there, but she protests, No, I'd be too embarrassed. She pauses and looks as if she's going to spill her soul. The thing is, she starts, but is interrupted by the customer who, at the beginning of the movie, kept on asking if they had different works of fiction and didn't pick up on Will repeatedly saying, "No, we're a travel bookstore."
Do you have Winnie the Pooh then?
No! Will points at him and commands that he leave immediately. He is not putting up with that customer's bullshit. Because he knows he's just going to come in there and be like, "So, what about the complete works of Shakespeare?" Once the customer is gone, Anna informs William that she's leaving town the next day, but instead if she stayed, whether he'd let her see him a lot or a little, and hopefully like her again. Will finally divulges that he heard her dismissing him on the film set yesterday, and Anna defends that she only said that because she didn't want to divulge her private life to the biggest gossiper in England. And I say, if she just casually said, "Oh, that's just a friend of mine that I'm meeting up with after we wrap," she would have been just fine.
I don't know about that.
Oh, really? What?
I'm an Anna defender. I'm an Anna defender.
You think that her saying, "Oh, it's just a friend of mine," casually would blow things up for her?
Possibly, only because of what happens at the end, and I could wait till then to go into deets.
Okay. The store phone rings, and William excuses himself to speak to his mother, but when he returns, he asks if he can just say no to her kind request. It seems like an ideal situation, apart from your foul temper, but I'm afraid my heart won't be able to recover again once you cast me aside, which I'm fairly confident will happen. There are just too many movies, too many posters. I'd see you every day. I'd be buggered. Everyone knows who you are, but you wouldn't have to have the perpetual reminder of me. My mother even has trouble remembering my name. Anna's eyes start to wander. Anna's
she's eyes. Like, "This is boring."
No. In a truly touching moment, Anna's eyes start to water. She keeps a brave smile on her face and says, "Wow, that's really a no." And then steals her resolve and explains, "The fame thing isn't real." And Tamara says, "Yes, it is." And reminds him, in the most quotable moment, "I'm just a girl in front of a boy asking him to love her." William is unmoved, so she motions to the gift, kisses him on the cheek, and leaves the store.
Next, we see William once again in Tony's restaurant, flanked by his friends, the usual crew, Honey, Max, Bella, Bernie, and now Tony, looking for reassurance that he did the right thing. Everyone agrees, although it seems half-heartedly that he did. Bella says, "Of course you did the right thing. Everyone knows actresses are as mad as snakes." Max adds, "Yeah, you can never trust a vegetarian," because she divulged that while they were at dinner. Then Spike enters through the door. "I was summoned. I'm here. What's up?" Honey explains that William has just turned down Anna Scott, to which Spike faces him and incredulously says, "You daft prick." Honey tries to convince Spike that it's a good thing, but he's undeterred. Bella looks at the brown package beside William. He's finally opened it, and the gift from Anna was the Chagall painting that he had a print of. She looks at it closely and asks, "Is that the real thing?" William believes it is, and everyone starts contemplating this. Bernie asks, "And she said she wanted to date you?" William nods, "She did." And he muses, "Oh, well, that's nice."
So the Chagall painting today is worth between $500,000 and $1 million.
Woof.
Just FYI.
I would forgive you for that. Finally, everyone's shifting demeanor tells William what he knew all along. He puts his head in his hands and says, "Oh, sod it. I've made the wrong decision." The camera pans to Spike, who nods knowingly and turns his back on William as if he can't even stomach looking at him. William turns to Max and asks, "How fast is your car?" And we next see the lot of friends filing into Max's Subaru. Bella waves from the sidewalk at them as they're about to drive off, but Max will not leave his wife behind. He commands Spike in the back, and he and Bernie gather Bella in her wheelchair and pack him into the car and zoom off.
So this is the one point in time where I'm like, his friends have led him astray, because they should be like, get the fuck out of that toxic relationship. This is bullshit. No, you have made the right decision.
We're cutting you out of the group, Corinne. We're cutting you out of the group. You're out of the friend circle.
That having been said, I think his friends are really good friends to be supporting him in the decision that he's making. And so, yes.
I would still be like, go get that girl. Go get that girl.
Go get the girl that's treated you crappy each time that you've gotten together with her. Yeah. That's a great idea.
Anyway, where was I? Where was I? Let's see. They pack into the car and zoom off. Inside, William offers that Anna may be at the Ritz and everyone argues over what's the best route. Max, annoyed, finally slams on the brake and tells everyone his car, his directions.
Yeah.
They all apologize, and as he begins driving again, he mutters, James Bond never had to put up with this crap. They go to the Ritz, but the front desk manager informs them that Anna, a.k.a. Miss Pocahontas, has already checked out, but he thinks she's holding a press conference at the Savoy. William and Bernie both kiss his cheek in excitement on the way out, and a Japanese businessman nearby falsely thinks this is a British custom and kisses the desk manager's cheek before asking if there's any messages for Takumi.
I thought that was really cute.
Me too. The gang is off again, but traffic is brutal. So much so that Max has to do some evasive driving. Well, give me some lovin', give me some lovin', give me some lovin', give me some lovin'. By the Spencer Davis Group plays in the background. He's speeding down one-way streets, and at one point Spike gets out of the car to stop five lanes of traffic so they can turn into the Savoy. They rush inside, but when the concierge asks William if he has press credentials, all he can do is produce his Blockbuster video card. The concierge is unmoved.
Wow, what a difference.
William tries to convince him that he's their in-house writer. The man is about to turn him away when Bella rolls in and announces that she's there to write a piece about how hotels treat disabled people. This seems to be the magic words, and he directs William to the room where the conference is being held, although informs him that he is very, very late.
William rushes into the room, and it's a swarm of reporters hollering questions at Anna, who is seated at a table in the front next to her publicity staff. Someone asks how long she's going to be in London. Her PR chief informs them she's leaving immediately and is going to take a hiatus from acting for a year. William pushes his way towards the front of the crowd. A nearby reporter asks about the photos that were taken of her last time she was in England. Who was that guy she was with? She tells the room that he was just a friend and is still a friend, I think. She hasn't seen William yet, and now he knows that she was telling the truth about the gossipy co-star. And Corinne asks,
because
how does he know that she was telling the truth about the gossipy co-worker?
The co-star, because they all know who William Thacker is, like the press, the publicity, uh-huh. The paparazzi, they know who he is. And so the fact that in this group of press, she's like, he was a friend, he was just a friend, whatever. But she didn't want to tell the gossipy co-star because she knows that he would probably be like, oh, I'm going to look into this. I'm going to check out who this guy is and then probably go to the press and be like, Anna Scott was with that guy. He came to the set, the one that was halfway naked with her in the flat that time that she got those pictures taken.
He's in a room full of reporters and nobody recognizes him. Nobody, like, they look at him and they don't think, oh, he's the guy who was in a shirt in the front of the door. Nobody even bats an eye at him. So that doesn't work. That doesn't work.
It works for me.
I appreciate your explanation, though, because I read that line and I was like, I'm going to keep it in there, but I'm curious how you came to that conclusion.
Because if it was the opposite, she would be like, it was just a fleeting, like, I didn't know I was staying there to just hide out from the paparazzi. It was a safe house. It was nothing. I didn't have a relationship with that person. Like, she would be telling the press something along those lines, like she did to her co-star, instead of saying, like, yes, he was a friend. And yada, yada, yada. Her co-star would go off and be like, oh, she said this guy's a friend. If it was a nosy Nancy, like I know some nosy Nancys are, he's going to be like, I'm going to get a good look at him and be like, who is this guy? And then go back and figure out who he is and then probably go to the press because he's a gossipy little nit like she said he was.
Uh-huh.
Like if he's gossipy and like I know some people in my life, and I'm not comparing myself to Anna at all, but I know some people in my life, I will tell selective things too, because I don't want them to get around. And then I have very good friends that I'm like, I trust you with what I say. So like, because the selective things that get around can often get distorted and misheard and rolled in a certain way. So I think that's what she was doing with her co-star.
But if she had just called him a friend, then it wouldn't have been an issue. If she had been like, that's the guy I want to bone, or I'm going to confess my love to and give a very expensive Chagall painting to, that would be like a different matter entirely.
Right. But I mean, she might have known better that he would have been like, and his ears would have perked up at the word friend and been like, okay, girl, and looked over there a little more closely at him.
All right.
William. He's still in the press conference, raises his hand and gets called on. He asks Anna, are there any circumstances where you and your friend could be more than friends? She's surprised to see him, but answers, I had hoped that there would be, but was assured that there was not. William begins to ask another question and is stopped by the PR chief. Anna asks him to allow it, and William continues, what if this person... He pauses, and another reporter says helpfully, Thacker. His name was Thacker. William nods and continues, if Mr. Thacker realized what a daft prick he was and got down on his knees and begged for forgiveness, would you reconsider? And I say, I'm sorry, forgiveness for fucking what? What did you do? You didn't do a fucking shitty thing.
This also proves that people know who he is. They all know his last name, Thacker. When he says, like, the guy, and they're like, Thacker?
Sure, they know that they say to him, Thacker, they don't say you. They don't recognize him at all.
Not yet. Like, they're probably looking at Anna, and they're just like, they're not looking at the room of reporters at the moment yet.
The guy turns to him, looks at him, and says, Thacker.
And probably doesn't place him until he starts getting all sweet on Anna, and then they're like, oh, wait.
Yeah, that's much more explicit, please. Anywho,
the room starts to buzz because people realize that this is not a normal reporter question, only one that a person from Horse and Hound could ask.
Anna looks at him directly and says,
yes, I believe I would. And William smiles and tells her and the room, that's very good news. The readers at Horse and Hound will be very excited to hear that. Anna leans in and prompts her PR chief to request the first reporter to ask his question again. He does. Anna, how long are you going to be in England for? She smiles in William's direction and says indefinitely, sorry,
punctuation. It says indefinitely.
Smiles in William's direction and says indefinitely.
And they look at each other as the paparazzi goes crazy, snaps picture of Anna as well as William, peppering them with questions if they're going to get married. But there's nobody in the room but the two of them. And then Tamara has written, and they gaze, G-A-Y-S.
I just noticed that. And the gays are intent and happy. Sorry. She's supposed to be G-A-Z-E. G-A-Z-E gaze.
She's just thinking about the co-star that she was so worried about blowing up everything with his gossip.
I've dealt with people like him before.
So they gaze intently and happily at each other. And they may not be in a kiss tractor beam, but they are in a love tractor beam where it's just the two of us. They can make it if they try.
If they weren't in a room full of paparazzi, they'd be eye-fucking each other.
Oh, they'd be more than eye-fucking each other. The Elvis Costello song She plays again, and now we see Anna and William's shared life. They get married and have a glorious reception with all of the usual crew there and a really ugly wedding cake made by that guy whose restaurant closed down. It was like a fucking white pyramid or something. I don't know what was going on with that thing. Then we see Anna at a movie opening, and William is there looking handsome in a tux, accompanying her to the red carpet. And finally, we see the two of them sitting on a bench in a public park. Will's sitting reading a book, and Anna's laying with her head on his lap, their fingers intertwined.
Yes, yes, I know. I was just like, I can just read this inside.
As As she watches kids play in the distance, and as the camera pans out, we notice that she is very pregnant. So they lived happily ever after? Question mark. The end.
I was just laughing because I'm like, they're on that bench, the bench, the one at their first date. They're sitting on it now, and you're like, no, it's not. It's the wrong bench. They're in the park. They're not in that courtyard. So it's just laughing at your revisions, and I'm like, no. No, I'm going to tell myself forever in my heart that they're at that bench in the courtyard.
Look, your ending is better. I totally agree with you.
Yes. Yes, it is. That's my ending and I'm sticking to it.
Yes, it's a good ending. I agree with you. So, Miss Tamara, what do you think about the movie Notting Hill?
The one reason why I was like, oh, we're going to so fight over this is because a long time ago. And I was like, I love Notting Hill. And you're like, fucking Julia Roberts is awful.
Yeah.
I was like, oh. And then I started watching it again with more of a discerning eye. And I'm like, yeah, she's pretty bad, but I don't care. I still love this movie. I think Julia Roberts' acting is wonderful. I think that Hugh Grant is charming as fuck. I love the writing in this goddamn movie. There are so many bits and pieces. Like you said, like the most quotable line is, I'm just a girl standing in front of a boy asking him to love her.
Yeah.
How that continuous season scene got bitten probably by more than one movie.
So Spike, many movies. Like
the characters, like all of them are just memorable. And I love the friendship dynamic. Mm-hmm. I want to go move to Notting Hill stat like, right now. If for anything, the lesser amount of guns there. But yeah, I've just always liked this movie. And I know that Anna Scott is terrible. Like I kind of attribute it to them having separate lives. Like, one thing that stuck out to me about this movie mm-hmm. is how she's going on about the paparazzi and how she's like really heated. And he was like, I just need a normal amount of perspective from you. Like, it's just the cameras and it's a picture, it's a paper. It's going to be lining tomorrow's waste paper bins. And of course, at first I was like, yeah, Anna, calm the fuck down. But then also in the recent years, reading Prince Harry's book and seeing mm-hmm. what's going on with him and Meghan Markle and how relentless and kind of evil some of the tactics the paparazzi use are.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, oh, it's almost like a precursor, like they were probably doing stuff like that way back in the day, but we weren't privy to it because it wasn't common knowledge. So I can kind of get why she flew off the handle. I think that her anger was misdirected.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of like that part of being horrible. I was like, yes, you were horrible, but also you were angry. Anger was misdirected. And you were also probably pissed off that you wound up there and your fucking friend ratted her out. And like I said, the first time with the Alec Baldwin thing, like I thought maybe she was just trying to get it in real quick and just have like a fun fling and wasn't thinking super seriously. Like, I know that when I was dating people, I wasn't like, I'm not going to talk to this guy about that guy. I'm not going to tell him about, you know, I was still seeing Dan. And if I went on one date with one guy, I wasn't going to be like, well, I have this ex that we're still trying to work it out, but we're not sure what's happening. So I kind of figure it's like that type of situation. Mm-hmm. So I kind of give her a pass for not telling William initially about Alec Baldwin. And besides that, Alec Baldwin was a dick. And maybe she was probably like, you know what, I'm going to get rid of this fucker because he's afraid of me getting fat.
Mm-hmm.
So that, like, yes, she behaved badly on those two accounts. But I think they're kind of forgivable offenses. And also in many, 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 many of the romantic comedies, like the tables are turned.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy's kind of awful and insufferable. Yeah. But the woman keeps coming back and loving him.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like that this one, the switch is flipped.
Yes, I completely agree.
She's kind of the one with the power. Mm-hmm. She's kind of the one that's in the dominating role. Like, she's the gettable catch that, you know, everybody wants.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that point of view. So I'm going to give this movie, even though, like, some of the crap is seriously wrong with it, 4 dry kisses.
Okay.
I still love this movie. I still watch it if it's on. And I think I liked it slightly less after having to outline it, but only because there was so much going on and I wanted to capture every goddamn bit of it. So, Corinne, how many dry kisses do you give it?
2 dry kisses. This movie had absolutely no diversity in it, but we're just going to move on from that point. But it did actually, the one, it did have some inclusion in it because the he has the friend who's in the wheelchair, which I actually, that was good.
Mm-hmm. And there's Bernie, who's just so obese.
Oh, God. Right. Yeah, that size diversity of somebody who's a size 10 right. instead of a size 8 is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I'm fairly confident Bernie weighs less than me.
Oh, I know Bernie weighs less than me. I definitely like the friend dynamic. I definitely think that this had some like really good moments in it. And man, fucking Julia Roberts, she's incredible. Even though I totally felt like she was very kind of fucked up throughout this movie, when she's like, I'm just a girl standing in front of a guy asking him to love her, I'm like, yes.
So acting chops, man. She's got great acting chops and she's an actress.
Does. I was like feeling teary. I was like feeling the heart feelings. So like, I understand why you feel the way you do about this movie.
I didn't say her either, but she's just got like her little, like when she's trying to be stern and she's smiling and you could tell like all the stuff that William says is like absolutely tickling her, but she's like trying to put on a facade. Mm-hmm. Like she did that so well in this movie. I'm sorry. I'll shut up now.
No, it's fine. This is a conversation.
No, I said my piece. I gave my 5-minute dialogue about why I like this movie, so I'm going to let you see you finish.
Yes, you must shut up and enter the cone of silence, so it's all about me.
Okay, well, you just go ahead and finish, and I'll just sing She by Elvis Costello softly underneath you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. No. This movie definitely has a great soundtrack. There's a lot of soul music in it and stuff like that. I really like that. And I just felt like it romanticized toxic relationships, and that's a boo. But I do want to like double down on what you said. I really liked how the roles were flipped so that she was the smarmy McSmarmington that had a boyfriend that wasn't really talking about it and kissing the other boy and that kind of a thing. I really liked how the dynamic was flipped in this, and I thought that that was clever. So it had some like things that I really liked about it. The only reason why it gets 2 dry kisses is because romanticizing toxic relationship.
Boo!
Boo! But I understand how there's likability to it, definitely. I was swept away in a few sections. I completely agree. This was no Bridesmaids.
Oh, boy.
Well, no, yeah, I just, we had a yin
and, no, I know. I said we had like a yin and yang week because last week I said 2 and you said 4. And this week you said 2 and I said 4.
Payback. No, it's not like that. Oh. I was surprised you went as low as you did last week. So.
Oh, with Pretty in Pink?
Yeah.
Yeah, I honestly liked that movie a lot more back in the day than I did today. And it might be like how you were like, I think it captured a moment in time really well. And I was like, yeah, that was a moment in time I'd prefer to forget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the reason why I don't listen to true crime obsessed Patrick and Jillian doing the My So-Called Life recaps. Because I'm just like... My So-Called Life, leave that behind in the rearview mirror. That is just a time that is so emotionally charged for me. And that movie, that TV show captured it so well. I do not need to hear it retold.
Yeah. Yeah, that might be where my mind is for the late 80s, early 90s. Ugh.
Yeah. But I think I should have given Pretty in Pink 3.5. But regardless, it doesn't matter.
No go backsies. No go backsies.
Well, I'm no going backsies on the 2 dry kisses that I'm giving Notting Hill, but I'm giving them with love. And what movie are we doing next week, Tam?
We are doing a Hallmark movie. It's All of My Heart with Lacey Chabert.
Ooh, this is going to be exciting.
Our buddy Benny's going to have to tune in for this one.
Benny! If you have anything you'd like to say about Notting Hill, toxic relationship, or romance for the ages, write to us at onedrykiss@gmail.com or reach out to us on the social medias, Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, all at onedrykiss.
One spelled O-N-E, and as always, if you can find the time to rate and review us anywhere you listen to this podcast, we'd greatly appreciate it. But in the meantime, we thank you for stopping by, and we bid you adieu with one dry kiss. kiss. Mwah. See you next time.
See you next time. Stay out of toxic relationships. Love you.
Oh my God, this is not a toxic relationship.
You're not the only person who can press record, so there.
I think I did it better than you, though, I have to say. I did it with finesse.
Oh.
I pressed record with finesse.
Well, I did it with aplomb, so there you go.
A finesse beats aplomb every day.
What? Net.
Yes.
Net.
Yeah.
Net.
So sorry to tell you that. God, we're fighting and we haven't even got to the countdown clap. Jeez, oh. We're on a roll today. You ready for the countdown clap?
I am ready. I was born ready, okay?
Oh, shit. Well, I was in the womb ready. How about that one? When I was a glimmer in my father's eye, I was ready. Okay. And 3, 2, 1.
Oops. This is the wrong movie. Just a second.
That would be so great if I let you go three paragraphs and be like, oh, Corinne, we're not doing that movie this week.
We just did Pretty in Pink. Yeah, but I want to do it again.
Oh, no, you don't. I mean, you might, but I don't.
I don't know. It's a banger of an episode. I mean, just think about the new heights we can take it to.
I think it was just a, whatchamacallit, it was like a comet that streaked across the sky. We just have to like look at it lovingly and be like, that was amazing, and let it go.
Fine. Try and let it go.